A chubby baby is generally considered to be a sign of a healthy child. But now, some new Australian research suggests this might not be the case. Joining us is Joel Werner, who's sitting in the Health Reports chair while Norman Swan has a break. Joel, good morning.
Morning, Fran.
So, a jolly fat baby used to be seen as a blessing. But chubby babies aren't necessarily healthy babies. Is that the issue here?
It's devastating when science challenges our popular beliefs like this. It's a great study coming out of Sydney Uni. They followed a bunch of kids from birth to 8 years of age, and they found that for every kilo that you put on, so this is a height-adjusted kilo, much like we measure body mass index in adults, but for every kilo you put on in the first 18 minutes of life, doubles the risk of being obese at 8 years of age.
So give me that stat, that ratio again.
So every kilo that you put on in infancy in the first 18 months of your life, it doubles your risk of being an obese kid at 8 years of age.
So what is the rate of weight gain that is healthy? Because everyone watches their child to make sure they are gaining weight, they are growing, they're measuring this all the time.
Yeah, so there's the traditional measures of healthy weight in infants still hold, but it's this extra kilo that's been seen to be really bad news. The other measure that turned out to be nasty for these kids was this idea of arterial wall thickness. So this is an indicator of your increased risk of having a heart attack in your 40s and your 50s. And they found that these kids who put on the extra kilo in infancy also had thicker arterial walls at 8 years of age. So really early signs that what happens in the first 18 months of your life could be predisposing you for a heart attack at 40 or 50 years of age.
Now, of course, what happens on the eating front in the first 18 months of your life is, well, for some of that period anyway, is breastfeeding or not breastfeeding largely. Is this a contributor to the notion of why some babies are fatter than others and some of them unhealthier and fatter than others?
This breastfeeding was seen as key in this study. So if you breastfed for at least 6 months, especially the first 6 months, then the babies who were on the breast were seen to be of a healthy weight, whereas those that went on formula were seen to be these kids that were putting on the extra weight. The idea here is that if you have a bottle of formula, then the baby will just finish the bottle, whereas if you're on the breast, you just drink until you're fed and then you stop.
At the risk of frightening everyone off formula feeding, because, of course, sometimes it's needed and essential, there must be ways to balance that.
I think the idea of managing your baby's intake in a way that's natural, so not trying to overfeed the baby. I think culturally and traditionally we've had this idea that you feed a baby as much as it can eat. And I think the idea now is that you try to just balance that out and keep the baby within the healthy recommended weight range.
Oh, it gets harder and harder, doesn't it? Also this afternoon on the Health Report, Joel, you're following up the US Supreme Court's landmark ruling on gene patenting, which came out on Friday. It has interesting implications for Australia, this ruling.
It's a huge decision. In Australia, the test for patent validity is whether or not there's an artificially created state of affairs. So if the idea of taking DNA out of someone's body is an artificially created state of affairs, in February, the Australian courts ruled that indeed extracting DNA from someone, as soon as you take DNA out of someone's body, you have an artificially created state of affairs, and therefore that DNA is patentable. So this decision is under appeal in the Australian courts. The appeal hasn't been heard yet, but it'll be interesting to see how the American decision plays out in Australia, because, of course, in America, naturally occurring DNA, so the DNA in your and my body, was seen as not being patentable, but some manipulations of that DNA in the laboratory were still seen as being patentable. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the next few months in Australia.
And Joel, the growing and emerging question, Dr. Google. lots of us turn to Dr. Google, much to the chagrin of some of the medicos. But what about using Facebook to answer your medical questions, social networking more broadly?
I find this a really scary trend, Fran. I mean, people apparently go onto Facebook and ask their friends about symptoms.
Yeah, but that's human nature, isn't it?
Well, and this is the idea that, you know, you trust people you know and you trust
crowdsourcing
support networks
your medical advice.
Yeah, so it's this idea that we're increasingly moving towards looking for, not putting in a search term into Google and pressing I feel lucky and seeing what comes up, but turning to people we trust. And so there's a few exciting apps that are being developed for smartphones that are looking to capitalise on people's need to go and ask friends and support networks about their health.
So what would it be doing? Instead of just a general shout out to your friends, it would be steering you towards people who might know something.
It's almost like those boot camps that are organised in the morning, having those accessible to you on a mobile app. And so you have a network of people that are all tuned in to your biomedics, and then you can support each other to get through the hard winter days.
That's a brave new world. Joel, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Brad.
Joel Werner, and you can hear more from Joel and all those health stories on the Health Report at 5:30 this afternoon, right here